When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
It's Clinton Jones, he's back with us for another show. It's Ren Wagman, he's back with us for another show.
Yeah.
And you've got me, Jake, with you guys again for another show. And we may have Christian comment from time to time, but he doesn't have a video, so don't ask why you don't see him.
All right.
Guys, woo-wee, son, welcome back.
How's it going, guys? Clint, how you doing?
Oh, man.
How you feeling?
I am tired.
I'm beat. Why are you tired? Yeah. Why are you beat up? Did you get jumped in an alley?
No, not quite. Not quite.
Not again? Okay.
No, I've been waking up super early. I'm on a really early schedule, and
at 5
it's been
club?
Good. Yeah, it's been good.
Are you actually legit getting up at 5 a.m.?
5:45 to get started at 6.
What are you doing?
The first 20 minutes is a workout, so you got to get a sweat on. The second 20 minutes is...
You like roll out of your bed at 5:45, and it's just like right into sit-ups? Like, that's it?
Not quite.
At 6:05 in 1 second, you move on to the next thing?
No. So
5:45... No, you start at 6. You have 15 minutes to wake up and get ready for the workout.
Okay.
Exactly. So I wake up and then like...
I like that.
Basically, just that's what my dad said. I was telling him about it. Yeah, he's like, you know, he's like in the Batman comic books, you get out of bed and just do push-ups like immediately. I was like, I'm not at that level yet.
But
yeah, I started with 20 minutes of a workout, and then it's another 20 minutes of just like either like meditation or yoga, or like scheduling your day. So just journaling about yesterday and what you want to do today. Yeah. And then the last 20 minutes is learning something. So I've been reading this Rich Dad, Poor Dad book and trying to figure out finances and, you know, that difficult topic of finances.
What's there to figure out? You just go out to your tree where the money grows on and you just pluck the dollar bills off and continue your day.
I wish. I wish.
So, you know, I also got up at 6 a.m. today.
Did you? By choice?
No. So let's jump in for a little bit of story time real quick. So my wife, Jenna, is a nurse, and she leaves the house at 6 a.m. I didn't realize all that this morning. So at 6 a.m., I hear the door close, like very distinct door closing in the other room. And I'm just like... Yeah. Instantly awake. Jenna's next to me here. And I'm like, all right, Jenna's there. The dogs are in here. Someone is in our house. And I immediately sit up and I'm like, Jenna, wake up, wake up. She's not waking up. I'm like, we're about to get murdered in our own house. And that's when I realized she had put like pillows and stuff underneath the covers. So it looked like she was still in bed and fooled me for several seconds. I figured it out pretty quickly, but it was still like, I was awake. I was like adrenaline rushing through my body at 6 a.m. And she had no idea because she was like, oh, I'm going to work to, you know, heal people.
So she was probably trying to do something nice to be like, oh, Ren's so sound asleep. I'll put these pillows here and it'll make him still feel like I'm there.
I don't think she intended any of that. She likes to put like pillows between her legs for her hips or whatever. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Girl stuff, right? But I think she had enough pillows that, like, I was literally full. Because I remember looking at her. It was still kind of dark at 6 a.m. I remember looking at where she would be in the bed. And I was like, that's a body. There's a person there. Don't even think about it. She's still here. Who's in our house?
That's so scary. That's so sketchy. I mean, I did get you with those hard drives when I pretended to drop all those hard drives. And I had you for, like, a solid, like, 20 seconds. And you had to sit down on the couch and, like,
recover. Oh, my God,
recover.
That's right. An upcoming crew video where we're actually redoing some old VFX. Or maybe by this point, this video's out. I don't know when this podcast is dropping. But it involved us going through a bunch of old hard drives. And these are, like, the archive. Like, we had to take them out of the ground with a little toothbrush and wipe off all the extra sand.
We spent the last hour pulling them out and plugging them in and figuring out which ones we need. And we had to assemble, like, six of them to get, because it was on RAID 6. And we had to assemble.
Wait, yeah, really? you're like, I got all of these hard drives. These are the ones we need for this project. And you took a step and then tripped, and all of the hard drives flew out of your hand and clashed on the ground. And I was like, no! And you're like, oh, no, what have I done? And I was like, this is it. We have just lost years worth of information. And then Clint, you're like, oh. He just looked at me. And I was like, oh, you sort of. Sat down, and I had to, like, had to gather myself, because you got me. You got me good.
What did you guys have to do that for?
We were trying to, for a crew video, we're trying to remaster some of the old corridor videos. Yeah, the glitch.
Yeah.
So we had to find the original footage, and we were trying to find the actual project files with the VFX on it.
Right. Okay.
And we thought we were onto it. Like, we were an hour into this, like, case. We were solving this case. It was like national treasure. Yeah. And we had to pull all six drives because it was on RAID 6. And eventually we found them all. And as we were plugging them in, that's what I like just got empty cases and I just switched them out.
Important note. There were no hard drives inside these cases. They resemble the cases resemble what do you call those lighters? The Zippo lighter.
Yeah.
Where it's like the whole top just kind of like rotates open.
Yeah.
And then you put the hard drive in. But we had all these cases because we had been taking all the hard drives out of them. And I thought he had already put them all back in.
So I recently learned that if you just let hard drives sit, sometimes they will naturally lose data. Like if they're traditional disk drives.
Mm-hmm. Shoot.
Yeah. So I literally just learned this like a month ago. And so now I'm like, oh God. Because our entire archive from like 2015 before is sitting
on. Is gone?
No, it's not gone.
Yeah, it is, Jake.
Wait, what? Really? Are you breaking news to me?
Huge asterisk. It is kind of not gone.
I mean, we have the videos. The project files aren't that important. It's all about the final, like, high-res videos.
There were a couple hard drives that straight up didn't work.
Is there raw footage?
No.
Yeah.
No, yes.
For glitch. Yeah. Okay. There's raw footage.
There is raw footage. But it's like, and I knew going into this, I was like, I'm pretty sure none of these project files still exist for this project. And I'm like, oh, let's go find them. Open up the VFX folder. Empty.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember we deleted those, I think. I remember. okay. But I think the final thing we did was like, we'll save the high-res render and we'll save the YouTube render and then we'll save the raw footage. I think that's what we ended up agreeing on for a lot of those projects.
Which I don't really know why.
I don't know why either. It's like, I guess we can do all the work and recreate it if we want.
No, there's no way. Never.
I don't
know. I mean, hey, that's what we're doing, I guess, for a crew
video. Exactly what we're doing right now. We're trying. The idea is that we were going to open up the original After Effects file and load it up onto an old computer and the brand new computer, which this video is about, and see like how fast each video renders that same project file.
But there was no After Effects file.
There was no. There was no files, period. Effects files. There was the original footage, and so through that we were able to like get the original shot that so Peter's been working on that shot.
So I think what we need to do eventually, maybe next year, is put that on a tape drive.
I think that's, if it's not in progress, I think it's been brought up.
yeah, they brought it up. It's just it's a little cost prohibitive right now. Mm. Like it's kind of worth more than it costs more than it's really worth, but
right. I know, like, every time I talk to Spencer, he's like, "Oh,
yeah,
tape drives."
We're like, right,
tape drives.
I'd say we're like 6 to 18 months away from
what,
that.
What
being,
about
being
SSDs?
Useful.
Are SSDs just gonna like?
Basically, so all hard drives do have a lifespan where after a certain amount of time, just like the actual like atoms themselves lose integrity.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know exactly how it stores these bits and bytes, but Nico is describing it as for the tape, not the tape drives, the disk drives, you know, like the 5400 and the 7200 RPM drives.
Mm-hmm.
One of these drives.
Yeah.
I just happen to have one sitting here. They, over time, the magnetic disks inside, because it's only a zero or a one, sometimes they can flip polarity. I'm sure I'm getting some of this wrong, but the idea is that, like, if over time some of those bits flip, and usually if it's just one byte here or there, it doesn't really impact the overall file because there's, like, literally millions of zeros or ones within a specific file, mm-hmm. and getting a couple of them mixed up doesn't really impact it. But over a long enough period of time, you have enough of those flips happening that more and more of those files become corrupted because they don't read as they initially did. And so that's how these drives end up dying over time, is that just given a long enough period of time, you open it up and it's like, yeah, the disk reads, but all the files are corrupt.
Right. Yeah. Do you have any concerns about that happening like to a greater level with like respect to like information right now?
No, I think there's a big enough effort towards information preservation, and yeah. there's constantly backups of pretty much everything out there just around. I want to do a video at some point about just how much information is on Earth.
Oh, that'd be good.
Yeah, I think that's, like that's library a prime books. Me video. Yeah,
like stacked library books or something.
Sure,
library,
totally.
Wren's Library of Alexandria.
Well, it's because it's like every year, most of the information that exists in the world was basically created that year. Rinse and repeat the year after that and the year after that. And it's like, it's crazy how much information is constantly being generated. But so to answer your question, there are people who are working on long-term storage solutions. And I'm not talking like 100 years. I'm talking like thousands of years. And they've got like special crystals.
Thousand years.
Yeah, like they're coming up with ways to like, even DVDs or Blu-rays do kind of, not decompose, but they break down over time. So even like hard discs are not dependable for periods longer than like 100 years. So
yeah, I mean, even books, you know, like books, it's hard to find a book
burn.
That's older than like 300 years old.
Yeah.
You know, like to find a 300 year old book is honestly pretty common, but like an 800 year old book, not that common.
It's because those are in museums and no one's allowed to touch them.
Right.
I remember not anytime I'm in a library, but I have been in libraries before. Where I just go and my task is to find the oldest book I can. And there's little sections in the library. It's like, oh, you can smell
like
it.
Antique
this smells
ones.
Like antique
oh,
book.
Dude.
And
dude.
You start pulling out random books. You're like, oh, 1872. Sweet. Put it back in. Oh, 1804. Oh, my God. What? Yeah.
Dude, I went to law school. And the amount of old books in those libraries... I think I've told this story somewhere before. Maybe it wasn't on camera, but one time I was studying for the bar exam, and I used to just take breaks like every couple of hours to like reset my brain. Mm-hmm. So I was just walking through the one of the sections, and it was a criminal law section, and I came across these books that, and I noticed there was something weird about the font. And there was like this weird S. It looked like an S on the book cover, you know, facing out.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is this? Yeah. And I pulled it out and I realized that it was like 1800, year 1800, you know, so like 200 years old, reprint of English common. Yeah. A reprint of English common laws from like the 12th and 13th century.
Wow.
And so it had it wasn't an S, it was an F or vice versa. You know how middle English Fs look like S's Or I mean, maybe it's vice versa.
I guess I honestly don't really specifically remember, but I do. Yeah. I'll take your word for
here,
it.
Here, let me just
like
look
I do know that like Old English has like weird characters
Old
that
English
kind of evolved yes. over time. Wasn't there also something where it's like some characters used to actually be two different characters and they got merged over time, or vice versa? Like old characters actually ended up having to become two different characters.
W. Why is it called W? Why is it called W?
Because
it's W.
Double V. Yeah, and I think French, double V?
Yeah.
It's double V.
Double V. Well, the V and U used to be the same letter in Latin.
Oh, well, okay, case in point.
Yeah. So anyways, I open up these books, and I start reading through them, and I can, like, barely read it, because I don't know if you guys have ever read Old English, but it's almost, like, well, Ren, did you live in Germany? Ren?
Norway.
Okay. Well, in Germany and in Norway, I think a little bit, but especially in German, it's so close to English not in its like written origin, but in its spoken origin, that if you read German, a lot of it, if you read it phonetically, if you just like, you don't understand what it means, but you just literally say what you think it sounds like, mm-hmm. it will sound like words in English, and a lot of times that's actually what it is. Because German and English are similar in that way.
Well, they're Germanic languages, right?
Exactly. Yeah, they're Germanic languages. And so the older you get into English, the further it gets removed from, like, modern English, and the more
Germanic... And closer
Germanic
to German it gets?
Yes. And the more Germanic it becomes. So you're literally, like, reading words that are spelled completely differently from what they how they're spelled today, but they sound the same, and those words are those words. They're just spelled totally differently.
Okay.
Yeah, and you can start to see, like, how these languages, like, split and divide and, like, kind of go with different peoples over time. It's crazy. That's one of the most fascinating things that I, like, was discovering when I was in law school, because all these words go back to, you know, some other word. There's like Anglo-Norman, which is its own language, which is like a mix between English and French. And there's like Germanic. There's all these Germanic subtexts, and like, yeah, it's crazy. But anyway, old books, man. So that's how we got on this. But yeah, like I sat there for like almost an hour just like flipping through this book. Oh, there was a code in there. I stumbled upon this code about... So the way they used to do edicts back in the day, they would like make lines.
I declare.
Yes. Yeah. No. Like literally, they would like draw lines, and then like write the code name, and then in the next column like write what the law is. And I came across this one that was about like the color purple, because the color purple in England used to be the royal color. You couldn't wear or display the color purple unless you were like a member of the royal family.
Okay.
And so it was like some sort of edict on like the way in which like purple was to be displayed or not displayed.
Man, they called dibs on a color.
Oh,
dang.
Yeah. They called dibs on a color for sure.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Also, Jake, it doesn't surprise me at all that you would procrastinate and take a break from studying for the bar exam by reading old English books, ancient archived English books, as a break from studying law.
Dude, I just get down on that stuff, man. I don't know. I just find it fascinating. It makes you feel like you haven't been on the earth for like very long at all, you know?
Totally. It is fun to like connect the dots as far back as you can go, because it's like, I exist. I know that my dad exists, right. And then his dad had a dad, and then like he has stories about him, and then it just goes all the way back, and it's like, how far can you go, you know, and like trace that.
I think it's something around 60 generations is how long it's been since the dawn of the written word.
Really?
Yeah.
That's it?
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. Think about it. Every person is roughly, you know, 30 to 100 years. So 60 generations, that's several thousand years.
Nothing, though, when you talk about like the way that information gets transferred from one generation to the next. That's literally like baby level.
Well, it supports the argument that physically humans today are extremely similar to how they were thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
Well, that makes even more sense, you know. But like, it takes a lot longer of a time frame to change physiology, you know, in terms of what you're born with, than it does to change the language that you use.
Yeah. Well, it only takes a few generations for a lot of that information to evolve. It's like, I mean, it's like 2-3 generations, and that's more than, that's not even, it's before the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah. Well, almost, yeah. I can trace my, on my dad's side, I can't do this on my mom's side or my dad's mom's side, but on my dad's side, we can trace that back 9 generations.
Whoa. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know my mom or my grandma has been getting really into genealogy and like tracing family history and all that stuff lately.
Yeah, it's pretty
last,
cool,
like,
man.
Decade or so.
Like, it's pretty cool. It gives you context for like everything, you know, and that's super important to remember. Like, you know, I feel like in today's world, you're always required to have an answer about something, or you're always required to like have a way of being about things. And you know, I think sometimes it's okay to just sit back and be like, look, like, you know, my family's only been in this country for a generation or 2 or 9 or whatever, you know, like, maybe we don't know this, or maybe, you know, I've only been speaking this language for 3 generations in my family. Like, I don't know what that word means. I don't know what this, and to just be okay with that, because that's, how else do you get better? You know, you have to kind of like, find a root, find a foundation somewhere, and then build on it, and build it, and then pass it on to the next generation.
Yeah, yeah. I was having this conversation with somebody that, like, I think it was about VFX technology, that, or like filmmaking just in general, which I think this concept can apply to many things, but the idea of people paving the way and filmmakers figuring things out like for themselves at the top of their game.
Yeah.
And then like people see that and then they take it and then they improve upon it. Yeah, exactly. And then they come up with something
innovators.
New. Because someone asked me like, oh, do you think like these old filmmakers are like rolling over in their grave about like, I forget what it was. And I was like, no, probably not. They're probably like, oh, that's cool. Like we paved the way for all of this innovation to happen and stuff. Christian type Saving Private Ryan in the chat. What was that?
That's what the conversation came from. We were just like,
hey, there's Christian.
What's up, Christian?
Yeah, just chiming in. That's where that conversation, we were in that conversation with, I think, some of the Black Rifle guys. And we were just like, wow, Saving Private Ryan really like set the tone. And then, you know, just the paving the way conversation kind of developed from there.
Before Saving Private Ryan, how many films were there that really kind of captured that sort of tone in like brutality?
I mean, was that like kind of the first? Old war movies, like
old
Braveheart.
War movies. I mean,
well,
I guess
Saving Private
something...
Ryan was 97, so
yeah, but like Saving Private Ryan has like this grittiness to it that I feel like was kind of a first of its kind.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I know that's paved the way for us. It's today's sponsor, Storyblocks. Red knew I was going to do it. It's today's sponsor, Storyblocks, guys. Let me tell you about them right
Love
now.
Them.
Hello, everyone. You might be wondering why I'm wrapped in this beautiful emergency green screen blanket, and the answer is simple, because today's podcast is sponsored by Storyblocks. They're the one-stop shop for all your video asset needs. So whether we need B-roll, After Effects templates, motion graphics, sound effects, or more, we go over to Storyblocks.com and we get what we need over here at Corridor Digital. The best part about Storyblocks is that they have a virtually unlimited library of content, meaning that you can go on their site and you're never going to use the same thing twice. With their unlimited all-access plan, you guys can download as much content as you need, put it in your video, and then distribute that video wherever you need. So whether or not you're already a professional creator, or you're just somebody looking to start out and improve your YouTube videos that you're just making for fun, Storyblocks is a great resource that we've been using for years. If you're interested, head on over to storyblocks.com/corridorcast to get started. That's storyblocks.com/corridorcast. And if you're super cool, consider taking my head from this green screen and putting me in Hawaii. I'll wait. Okay, just kidding. Back to the podcast.
And we're back. Whew. So paving the way. Well, obviously that happened with digital tech, right? When digital tech, digital cameras came out, you know, and people started picking them up, but they were all janky. They couldn't expose, you know, they had low.
It was like super blown out.
Yeah. Dynamic
range was so low.
No dynamic range. You're talking about like 720p.
Dude, 720i, son.
720i. Yeah. Interlaced. And you know, like all of the people who picked those cameras up, whether they did it because they wanted to for artistic purposes, or they did it because they had to because they couldn't afford a film camera, which is the reason why most people did it.
Mm-hmm.
That innovated, you know, the filmmaking industry.
Well, yeah, I mean, like 100%. I'd say probably arguably the biggest change to filmmaking was when Canon dropped the 5D Mark II back in 2008, 2007, mm-hmm. somewhere in that time frame. It was the first like DSLR that could record HD video directly to like a card, and you could use your Canon lenses, because before then it was all just like HD, like Handycam essentially, where you had like the DV codec and all this stuff. And if you wanted to use different lenses, you had to use like these crazy like lens adapters, but you'd lose like field of view, mm-hmm. you would lose like clarity, it'd always be a little blurry. And yeah, you're recording to these tapes. It was always kind of like this, like, it works. I'm going to make 28 days later. It's great.
Sure. Yeah.
But
like
suddenly,
leaning into it, though, you know?
Yeah.
Not trying to make it cinematic, but leaning into the technology.
But that was when everyone started making DSLRs and everyone started using DSLRs to produce videos, because suddenly you can create amazing quality like videos, because all it takes is just like a camera with a decent f-stop to make your background blurry, and suddenly it looked like the most professional video anyone had ever made, and it was so little effort. These days, and for the last 10 years or so, that was kind of like, we get it. We're over that.
Yeah.
It's about everything else now, but that was kind of like the turning point in my eyes when it comes to like digital video, because so many more people started embracing it, and so many more people were able to iterate on those old filmmaker techniques, because there's a huge barrier to entry before that, and now there's not a barrier to entry. And these days, even less so, because everyone has the best camera to ever exist from 10 years ago just in their pocket.
It's insane to think about the way that film production used to be when you have such access to the cameras now, which are just in your pocket, because even back in the day with film cameras, they used to, before they had video review, your actual cinematographer would be sitting there, whether it was a manual roll or an actual, you know, motor roll, and he'd roll on it and he'd see the frame.
Motorola?
Is that where that comes from?
I have no idea. Probably not.
Okay.
Sorry, continue.
So anyway, he'd roll on it, and then he'd see it with his viewfinder, and then he'd go, yep, we got it. Or, nope, we didn't. And he'd be like, that shot just cost $30,000. Can we see it? No, you can't. You have to take the film out in a very specific way and have it developed, and then you can see it. And
yes, well, that's where the phrase get another one for safety comes from.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think I got it, but my confidence level isn't very high, so let's just roll another one just in case. We still do that today, but today we can obviously review it and be like, actually, no, we got it. It's fine.
Right. Even the term rolling, a bunch of other set terms, like you don't actually do.
It's interesting because I feel like the look of film is so ingrained into our minds, you know, because that's what everything was shot on mm-hmm. up until, you know, I don't know, 15 years ago. I don't know, 20 years ago.
Do you think same for like, do you think that'll be the same for young kids, or do you think they'll have their own version of that? You know, because like even digital images have had a look over time.
But it's like there's like. Oh, this is interesting because there's a digital look, which to me is bad compared to film, which is the best, you know, but there's digital also tries to replicate film with its color correction, you know, and it's like grain and, you know, a lot of the different characteristics that you get from film.
And film has like a nice like roll off of the highlights. Like it, the way it handles dynamic range is different, like fundamentally different than how a digital sensor processes highlights.
Right.
And so a lot of cameras have been trying to emulate that sort of like roll off of highlights that film has. And it's everything. Yeah. It's always just been trying to emulate that look because that's what everyone has always associated with the film look.
Mm-hmm. And like the digital cameras are certainly cheaper and more widely accessible. And they're, you know, I feel like for a certain time and maybe still now, like a lot of people are trying to get to that film look. There's a digital look, you know, that I know, like, what is it? David Fincher shoots all of his stuff on like Red and it's all digital. His stuff looks so good.
It looks great. It's not like it looks bad. It looks phenomenal. But like even the thing we shot the other day, the Halloween video with Black Rifle, mm-hmm. like we shot that on Blackmagic.
The 6K?
Yeah.
The 6K and the
6K 4K. 6K or
4K? We had both out.
Oh.
It was both. I honestly, Sam was shooting. So I didn't.
We had both. One was on a gimbal. One was on a handheld.
Okay. I think the gimbal was the 6K.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And, you know, the thing that, obviously the Blackmagics look real nice. You know, they've done a good job sort of giving that initial emulation of film. But the thing that I think took that piece and made it look even nicer was the lighting.
Yeah, the lighting is supposed to, like, it really comes down to your lighting, really. At the end of the day,
if you look at old films where the lighting's not that good, it doesn't look that nice, you know? Like, even in the 60s and 70s when they didn't have, like, sometimes they didn't have it, you know? And they were kind of, maybe they're trying to do it on the cheap and stuff.
Well, there's a reason why, like, the lighting department has always been a huge part of filmmaking.
Right.
Oh, man, yeah. I got theories on this. So basically, the shooting something on film where you have that grain, there's kind of like a veil between you and the footage, and it makes it feel more magical, more like a dream, more like it's in your head when you're watching something. And when you take that veil away, it's just like real life, crispy clean. And that veil and that like imagination kind of disappears a little bit, maybe subconsciously. At least that's my theory.
I think that comes from lighting, because if you look at our lighting right now, right? This is obviously, we have like horrible digital lighting right now. But like, even if we were sitting in the same room together, you wouldn't have the same lighting that you usually have in a regular piece with nice lighting. You know, it's because think about it, in your consciousness, in your everyday, when you walk into a room and the sunlight is hitting a room in a certain way, like maybe it's like sunset or it's like evening, you know, and the sun hasn't quite gone down, or it's morning and the sun is like off and it's softer and it's maybe coming through a window in a certain way and creating like actual frame lines that are guiding your eye. The first thing that you notice is the lighting in the room.
Yeah.
But in a piece that has nice cinematography with good lighting, that's every shot. And
yeah,
so immediately, I think there's also a subconscious where you see something that has nice lighting and you don't know why it looks good, because you expect it, because it's within four corners on a frame that you're watching, you expect it to look good, but you don't necessarily know why. And that, I think that's a huge reason why. Because it's not like you walk around in your everyday life and everyone has perfect rim lights and fills, you know, when you're like in conversation with people.
That's just movies. Like everything in a movie is over dramatized in order to look its best. Like hair, makeup, lighting, the camera, the story, the characters, right. Like everything, that every little piece that goes into making a movie is maxed out. And it feels like a movie. It's not real life. It's a movie, you know? And like, this was the hardest concept for me to grasp. Cause I'm like, no, you want it to be like real life. Like real life is like super realistic and you want it to be like that. And it has to be like that. It's like, well, no, I mean, real life isn't this dramatic for most people.
Well, why you don't make videos about real life every day? Because it's not as interesting. You know, everyone can relate to it. What you want to see is something that's different or like a new story or like a challenge, you know, or a success or a failure that someone goes through rather than just like, oh yeah, this is my commute to work.
You know, it's a story.
Hold on somebody for 20 minutes where like they have like perfect lighting on their commute to work like that.
Well, good lighting transcends the camera that you use. You know, it's like, right. Totally. You can get really, really good looking video footage just on like a GoPro if you have great lighting.
Yeah.
Whereas you can shoot that same exact scene on like a Red camera and just remove all your lights and it looks awful.
Right.
Yeah. It's like when you know, pull out your iPhone and you're like, oh man, this shot looks good. This looks really good. And it's probably because of the lighting.
This is what I wanted to say about film and digital. Like, there are old films that do not look good because they have bad lighting. Now, there's not necessarily a one-to-one. Like, if you just put it on film, it's going to look better. But if you look at films in the 80s and 90s where you're sort of at the epitome of the art of actual filmmaking, not like digital storytelling, but like shooting stories on film. Mm-hmm. And the movie industry also, like economically, was
The 90s was peak technology film processing.
It was peak technology for what all the tools that they were using at the time, like before digital came along. And especially late 80s, early 90s.
Terminator 2?
Yes. You get these freaking beautiful, beautiful films. Like, because they had the money, they could justify the expense, and they knew exactly what to do with the technology. Now, I will say, a well-shot piece in digital has its own look, for sure. But I think in terms of, like, aesthetic beauty, like, they both hold up with today's digital cameras. Now, it's a different look, so it comes down to personal preference.
Honestly?
If you like the film look better, then you're obviously going to feel like the films of that era are going to look prettier because that's an aesthetic thing. But in terms of like fundamentals, you know, framing, like the fall off, the lighting, the scope, the shape of the scene, like I still feel like we're getting that.
Yeah, you talk about like Blade Runner. Go ahead, Ren.
Yeah, great example.
I honestly think we're at a point now where there isn't really a difference between classic film look and digital look. Like, I feel like digital has gotten so good these days that it just comes down to the aesthetic preference of whoever's directing or color grading a thing. I think, you know, Blade, like, who's Runner, mastering Blade Runner is
that was shot on
gorgeous
film, though, I think.
Ari Alexa Mini.
Was it? Okay.
Ari Alexa XT series.
Almost no one shoots on film anymore. It's like 10 years ago, it was like, wow, this person shot on digital? All right. Social Network. Like, cool.
Nolan and...
There are a few holdouts. Nolan's probably the most famous, like, film holdout.
What's his name? God dang, Kill Bill.
Oh, Tarantino.
Yeah, he's... He every film is on film for him. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like you'll get like these random ones that are like, oh, a shot on film. That's awesome. It's nice to see that, like, that callback. Mm-hmm. But yeah, at this point, it's like you have Roger Deakins who shot Blade Runner and it's all in the Alexa, which people love the Alexa because it has the high dynamic range. Yeah, because of the dynamic range is maxed out.
Right.
And then you put it in the hands of a master like Roger Deakins and it's like, dude, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But you're right. There is an aesthetic difference there, I think, like, generally, that still exists. And, you know, there is that idea that people are trying to emulate the film look, and that's perhaps why Blade Runner, the new one, like, did so well in all those categories, and it was so acclaimed for all those things, because it maintained that look.
Jake, you mentioned earlier, like, you're like, all right, what is that going to be for the next generation of, like, what are they going to try to continue to emulate from what we're doing now? And It's like, I have no idea what that could possibly be, but you know, like frame rate, for instance, 24 yeah. frames per second became a thing because that was the slowest frame rate that filmmakers 100 years ago could achieve without it, the yeah. video being like actually like stuttery janky. And flickery.
Yeah. yeah.
And
because that saves you the most amount of frames. It gives you the most amount of actual footage to run.
Yeah.
Because it's going as slow as possible without looking janky.
Because if it is to go faster, then you're just wasting.
You're just wasting frames. Yeah.
Frames. But like that has become a thing now. Today we can easily upload a video at 180 frames per second for anyone to just consume at that frame rate, yeah. which no one does because there's not really good mediums for that. Long story. Yeah. My point is that we still hold to that 24 frames per second look because there's all of this psychology behind it now. You know, it's like that stuttery, that like it's not stuttery, but it definitely is not remotely as smooth as say 30 frames per second, which gives yeah. it like a little bit more of a little bit more like sports a realistic look. It gives it that soap opera look, right? Yeah.
It's the home video,
the reality, like video, the home camera. Video.
Yeah.
And maybe that's part of it where it's like, all right, we could do 30 FPS. We could do that now. So we're doing it. And now everyone associates that look with what TV shows were doing. And distinctly in their head, they're like, that is not what movies are doing. Movies look like this. So there's still like a definite difference between that. I love yeah. 60 frames per second video. It's very smooth. It's very temporally high resolution, but it is not the movie look. You know, right. there's a time and place for high frame rate uploads.
But if you put some awesome footage like aerial photography or what have you on a large TV, it's 60 frames a second in 4K without a bad compression ratio, but mm-hmm. like a nice compression, like that looks like you're there. It's like, you know.
Well, that was why I wanted to do Mario Skate. You know, like back in the day when we did that video, that was the 60 frames per second video. And the reason yeah. why I wanted it to, I paired the idea with that frame rate is because this is like a race, you know, going through town. So there's a lot of moving stuff. The ground is moving, the background, the walls are moving, everything's moving at a really high speed, and that you see that better at a higher frame rate. And that was why I specifically wanted to shoot that video at a high frame rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I remember that.
But like just like a drama, it like I feel like there's a bit of a barrier between what what's it called? The suspension of disbelief.
Yeah.
If it becomes yeah. more real, suddenly right. you're like, wow, this is real.
Instead
and you kind
of
like dislocate
watching,
from
yeah.
the drama.
yeah. Instead of watching two people have an argument and internalizing what their argument is and like how you feel about it based upon what you previously saw, you're sitting there at the table with them and you're like, oh, this is kind of awkward. Should I not yeah. be here right now?
But I don't think that that's because of the frame rate being slower or faster. It's just because of what we've been ingrained to consume, you know, like our experiences yeah. are defined by these things, and now that it's right. different, we're reacting. If they settled on 60 frames per second for movies 100 years ago, we'd be looking at 24 FPS and be like, wow, I'm just getting a headache from how stuttery this is.
Yeah.
No, this isn't
totally.
A movie.
Totally.
I want that traditional filmmaking look.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I wonder because like our eyes, it's all based off our eyes. Like our eyes are the truth, the ground truth, right? So like yeah. that's what it's all based off of is yeah. how we see. That's I don't know true. The frame rate of what we see.
It's variable. It's complicated. It honestly changes between like 80 frames per second and like 300 frames per second. It's variable what? Multiple times a second, depending.
Adrenaline, right? Probably
yeah.
kicks
how
in.
Does that? How does that? Sorry, you're gonna have to explain a little biology there. Like, how do you
I'll
equate,
do my best?
How do you equate frame rate to human?
So it's
perception?
You can't think of human perception in frame rate. That was a false.
Okay.
Metaphor, for lack of a better way to say it.
It'd be converted, like, right?
Yeah, there's a conversion process. We're not seeing. Our brain is basically capturing images as a stream of things happening. And if you have a shot of adrenaline or something happen or need to focus, your yeah. brain can process more images faster. And so right. you're
reaction
not seeing
time.
In a higher frame rate. You're just... that's exactly what you're doing. You're basically, you're not seeing things in slow motion. You're just able to process more frames in the same amount of time. So
you're
getting
more information
to your brain.
Yeah.
So it feels like time is moving slower because you're getting, your brain is processing so much in what seems like right. a smaller amount of time.
And the yeah. only thing we have to equate it to is frame rate. So that's why we say that.
Yeah, and it's like, right. it, and again, I am not remotely enough of an expert to talk about this confidently, but that's kind of how it works, is that there isn't like an exact refresh rate, and I probably don't even have the numbers right, but I do know there it is variable, and it's a pretty large variability.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. I mean, you know, we've all been in moments of like turmoil or danger, and you process that way faster mm-hmm. than you do normally.
I remember one time, Ren, you know that giant bridge in Pasadena, right? By the freeway, mm-hmm. the one goes mm-hmm. over. Okay. So mm-hmm. I remember I was with, I forget who I was with, but I was hopping a chain link fence. And it may have been you, Ren. I may have been with you, but I was hopping a chain link fence and I climbed the top of it and I like had my backpack on and there's like cars on the freeway going down on the left. And I'm hopping this chain link fence to go hop into like a grassy field to eventually get on the sidewalk. And I hop it. And I'm like, oh God, don't clip my legs. I managed to get over the fence. And as I was hurtling over the fence, I look up and I see a branch, like a jagged witchy branch, like coming right
branch.
At, yeah, right at yeah. my eye. And it like within the split second, I remember seeing that branch, having it fly towards me. My vision went like black because I basically just freaking like karate chopped it. I went whoosh, and I landed it and I was like, oh my God. And I thought about it. I was like, that happened so fast.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing it like there was these different frames of information. And I remember like seeing it closer, chopping it. And then yeah. like seeing the ground going like, and then, oh, that was intense.
Yeah. Cause our brains can change the timing of a memory. So when you think back on it, you have more information from that 1 second of time that you can slow down as a memory.
Yeah.
But when you're actually consuming that reality as it's becoming a memory, it's happening in real time as fast as you just sitting on a couch watching a movie.
Well, that's yeah. the whole thing of why, you know, humans are, I mean, remarkable, but obviously, like, you think about the way that you just even normalize time itself. That's all like the way that's like, oh, that seemed faster than that seemed so fast or that happened so slow. That's all based upon this, the intaking of information based upon like a normalized chemical state in your brain that most of us, you know, that's relatively the same across most of us. Because I don't know if you've ever done mushrooms or acid, but those things completely marijuana does this too. If you take too much of it, like it completely changes your perception of how fast or slow time is happening.
Interesting.
And that's not because like time is happening slower or faster. It's happening at the same rate it's always happening at, but what you're processing is happening differently than what you're used to.
Yeah.
And so it feels okay. like it's, so there's moments, you know, where you'll be like,
far out, dude.
Yeah, exactly. There's moments where you'll be like, oh my God, I just had the craziest thought and it'll feel like you were gone, you know, for like a long amount of time. And then you come back and it's like a minute later, or you're still like doing the same thing that you were doing before, or like, you know, not that you need mind altering drugs in order for that to happen. That's just an example, you know?
I got you.
Maybe it's because like you're trying to you're so focused. Like it's like when I rode motorcycles
right.
for like a 2 year period, which was just the best. I miss it so much. But when I was riding motorcycles, you could only focus on riding the motorcycle and nothing else you would die. Right. So I think that's why people say it's like meditation, is because really it is. Because meditation at the end of the day is just focusing on one task for an extended amount of time.
Right.
So you're focusing on the motorcycle and riding, and you know, when you come out of it, it's like when I come out of a VFX shot and I'm like, whoa, I was in that for like the last 2 hours.
Yeah.
You're like, man, I felt like no time passed at all, but really all this time passed, or it's the other way around. It's like really interesting.
The same thing happens in an edit.
Yeah. When you know, it's in like, the zone, when you get in the zone.
Yeah. When you're in the zone on an edit and you're just kind of like you know, you're moving through it and you're picking shots and you're like putting scenes together, you're putting reactions together. It's like hours can go by.
Oh, yeah.
You'll look up and you'll be like, oh, that was, I've been doing this for 2 hours.
You know? Yeah. When I do these like VFX streams on the weekend, I'll go for, I think my longest one was like 5 hours and 45 minutes. Whoa. And I was just sitting at this computer, like working on some like CG model or something.
Do you play like trance house music while you do this? Like, is that your background?
5 hours would be too much. I mean, honestly, 5 hours is too much of anything. Apparently not.
Apparently it's enough for you to do VFX tutorials.
That is a good point.
Oh, I mean like music wise, after 5 hours, I will be like, whatever I'm listening to, it's too much.
Yeah. But it's gotta stop.
Yeah. And then I'm freaking talking the whole time and it's my throat starts hurting.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a side tangent, but.
Okay. So I want to just get back to one more thing. And Clint, you don't have to talk about this if you don't want to.
Oh.
But yeah, there's two things. A, there's something that happened in your life recently. You can talk about that if you want.
Mm-hmm.
I think that kind of leads into what you were talking about at the beginning when we started this episode, which was like, you know, you're doing this 5 a.m. thing, you're focusing on self-improvement. And then one of the things you also said was like you're reading Rich Dad Poor Dad. Now there's another thing that you're just going through right now, you know, related to a square shaped thing that, you know,
is this a Squarespace segue?
No, it's not a Squarespace.
Just let Clint say it.
Yeah, I'm just trying to talk. If you want to talk about it, we can talk about it. But there's two really cool things that I'd love to just explore for a little bit. So.
Okay. Well, it's not quite official. But
you're talking about the box?
Yeah, the box.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
No, I did get engaged. We did get engaged.
Hey, congrats, Clint. You got engaged. You're going to be married.
Dude.
Yeah.
No, it's way exciting. To do that all
it's
casually.
Not quite yeah. official.
Okay, yeah. So sorry, I apologize. I was speaking in context there for just in case Clint didn't want to talk about this, but there's. So Ren, you thought we were talking about him getting engaged, then him saying it's not quite official.
No, I was being a little facetious there. I know both of the things you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
By the way, before we move on, like. My friend in college did the exact same thing that you just did. He's like, oh, yeah, we got engaged. Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny. I don't know. It's like we've been living together for the last year, you know, so it feels like we're basically married, you know?
Yeah.
And I honestly, the number one question I would always get after I got married was like, so do you feel any different? And it's like, no. I feel the exact same. It's the exact same. We're still living together. We're still doing our stupid things that we do every day. Nothing's different when you get married if you've already been living together.
That's kind of what you want, though.
I'm not complaining.
I think you should live. I mean, there's different opinions out there about this, but I think you should live with somebody before you get married to them because that you got to kind of, you know, you need to know that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one, definitely. Because, like, I was raised the opposite way. Like, you know, you got to get married
right
before you do anything.
And then you join houses, right?
Yeah.
And then you live together.
Exactly.
But yeah. So, and then the next thing that happened is you're in the process of buying a house or in the process of, you know, searching for a home. I don't know where you're at in that process.
A house?
But...
I thought you were talking about boxes.
So, yeah, it's exciting.
There's these two sort of monumental things in a man's life that you're kind of going through right now. Like, you know, marriage and a house. Like, does that factor into like this whole 5 a.m. phase or?
It's not the reason why I'm doing the 5 a.m. thing. And hopefully it's not a phase. Hopefully it'll be a lifelong thing, but I'm always just trying to get better. Like that's my thing is I'm always trying to just like learn as much as I can and get better at what I do. Because I truly think that as like we go further into the future and technology gets crazier and crazier and gets cooler and cooler, we're going to lose, our patience like just we won't have patience for anything and our discipline. And I think those things will go away pretty quick.
Finish your point already. God, I don't have patience for this.
Lingerer.
Yeah, there's like forced patience, you know, like sometimes you have to become patient because you don't have a choice.
Yeah, like
and
I got
to force discipline, but then there's also self-imposed discipline and self-imposed patience, which I think is, you know, more constructive ultimately.
Yeah, I'm basically just like, I mean, the cool thing for me is like waking up at 5:45 every morning is I never like ever will ever again be like, oh, I have to wake up so early for a shoot. It's just normal. Like it's just. This is the time I wake up, and an early call time is not a big deal. So it's preparing me for, you know, if I can make my life just a little bit hard on purpose,
yeah,
then I think I'll grow from that, and I'll be like preparing myself for any difficult task that comes in the future.
Honestly, so. I think the harder thing than waking up at that time is having the discipline to go to bed early enough.
Oh, dude, yes, that, freaking that, dude. that's why when we were in Texas for that travel production, I don't have, like, it'd be so lame if I was like, you know what, guys, I'm not going to play Smash Bros. With you. I'm not going to chill in the jacuzzi, and I'm going to bed right after dinner. Like, that would just be the worst, man. I can't do that.
Yeah.
But it's a little easier. Yeah, it was small. Yeah. It was kind of janky, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's been my biggest thing is that, like, that's the thing that I try to work on most is that just try to go to bed earlier. It's so hard for me, personally. Like, I can easily stay up all night tonight if I wanted.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to
see
the sunrise? I can easily stay up to see it. No big deal. Barely even have to try. So I'm constantly finding myself like, oh, I should probably try to get some sleep now. It's 3.
Yeah.
As long as you get those 7 to 9 hours. Man.
I know, and that's the thing is that is, and it's been kind of helped working from home in that regard. I can stay up later and still get plenty of sleep because I could just wake up at 10.
Yeah,
but I have been making a bigger effort to try to be like basically winding down, ready to sleep by midnight, and that has been leading to me waking up earlier throughout the week, and I find myself enjoying my days better. It's just so hard to have the discipline to go to sleep early.
Dude, I mean, I remember those mornings. That we'd have Ren where we'd one wheel into the office.
Mm-hmm.
So
I still do it.
Yeah, for sure. So those mornings for me, I'd get up and I'd go to a hot yoga class, and then I would one wheel with you to work. And those mornings were the best mornings ever. And I'm like, why don't I do this more often? Like, I feel so much better when I do it this way than when I just like roll out of bed and I'm like, oh God, I gotta get to work, you know? And I'm just like stressed.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I never want to wake up stressed. Like, waking up stressed is probably, like, one of the worst things ever. So doing the early morning thing has helped so much. I just take the morning slow, do it my way, and have, like, 3.5 hours before I have to start work. It's great.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. That's actually, since I've moved out here, you know, it's 9 o'clock where I'm at.
Oh, yeah. God, that's right.
And so, like, it's been nice in that sense. Like, I have a little bit more time for myself to focus on some things and, like, you know, get whatever it might be, my kids or my personal whatever, you know, to get that sort of situated, get my workout in, whatever, before I have to be, like, mentally transitioning over to focus on all the other things that we're working on day in, day out.
Because you're on our schedule.
Yeah, because I'm on Pacific. My work is on Pacific time. You know, my like actual creative work focus is on Pacific time. But then my life is on Central time.
Dude, that reminds me about when I was on night shift, like intentionally, because Jenna was on night shift. We were living together. This was during that like weird sabbatical where I wasn't working for Corridor because I was working on my Harry Potter film and then I was working on a couple other things.
Yeah.
Between when I finished doing behind the scenes and when I started working on Corridor Digital main channel stuff, I had like the sabbatical and Jenna was working night shift. So she would, you know, go to bed, wake up, you know, in the evening, go to work, come home, and then go to bed, you know, in the morning. Sleep through the day. So I was like, I will get to see her more frequently if I'm on her schedule. So I was basically like sleeping through the day, working all night, and then having a beer at like 7 or 8 in the morning, like, ah, good day.
Damn, Ren.
That's not good. Because after a while, I realized this is awful because I was having zero interaction with any other people because nothing's open at 3 in the morning.
Right.
There are no restaurants that you can just go to.
Yeah.
When I was living alone here in LA, I would go to eat at restaurants just because that was one way to have human interaction because I was living alone. Jenna hadn't moved here yet.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying is operating on someone else's time zone is an interesting thing. Granted, I literally just
that's an extreme had like the most example.
Extreme, yeah. It's like that's way more extreme than just 2 hours later. But yeah.
That's the movie version.
I don't know why it just that's reminded me of it. Version. I'm not saying it's the same thing.
That's the movie version. Cool guys. Well, Clint, congratulations, man. Once again, I mean,
thank you so much.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Long time coming.
I can't wait for you to open up a guest room so I can come and invade your space and wait for you to tell me kindly that I've overstayed my welcome.
Oh man,
it's gonna be great.
It's a rough conversation.
Just thinking about that is already giving me anxiety. I'm like,
hey man, what do you want to do today? <It's> like,
I gotta work.
No, that's awesome, dude. So congrats on that, and more journeys, more discoveries, both personally and within the creative craft. So always good to hear. Always good to hear from you here, man.
Absolutely, yeah. It's fun doing these chats with you guys. At the end of the day, it's a nice little like end of the day kind of cool down. Whoa.
Now we're just doing sound effects.
Okay, should I play an outro again?
Let's hear it.
All right. What did we say at the beginning of this podcast? That Clinton was here. Ren was here. Clinton was here. Ren was here. Clinton was here. Ren was here. And Jake was too. Clinton was here. He had a beer. Ren was here. He had a beer. Jake was here. He had a beer. And Christian was here too, but he only said one or two.
I think he literally said a total of 9 words.
Oh, you counted.
Later, y'all.
Oh, 12 11. Words. Oh, 11.
All right, see you guys later.
Cool. Peace, guys.
Thanks for watching.